Live from the Virtual Tone Studios in Houston, Texas, it's time for Tough Talk with Tony Gambone. And now, here's your host, Tony Gambone.
Welcome, listeners, and thank you for tuning in to the Tough Talk radio show today. It's 3 o'clock Central Standard Time here in Houston, Texas. And, well, it's the start of a new week. It's a great Monday for me. I had a great weekend here in Houston. I had a chance to meet, meet 20 incredible authors at a authors event that we had here for the Black Authors Networking Group here in town. Incredible stuff. I was just blown away by all the people. And people know that I do interview a lot of authors on my show. So it gives me opportunity to, I actually got to see a couple of people that I've interviewed here locally and in, from the Florida area and one from Alabama as well. So that was a very good time for me to put a face with a name and an interview. And, of course, there was that couple of TV stars there. I guess this one guy was the guy from Grey's Anatomy, Isaac Washington. And, that was the Friday, Saturday, and Sunday event here in Houston at the National Black Book Festival. I also had the pleasure of going to watch a dear friend of mine, a co-host on one of my radio shows as well, a lady by the name of Sharon Jenkins, graduate from the Houston Hispanic Professional Organization. And boy, I tell you, folks, when you step into other people's worlds, you learn a whole bunch. And a lot of times we're stuck in our own world and we depend on the news or the media to kind of give us the information that we make our own opinion about. And, I highly recommend checking out the minority areas in your local city and find out what people are doing there on a daily basis to improve their position in their neighborhoods and as their children go through their schools and the school board and the councilmen. It's a whole process that you just don't know. Of course, we never know anything unless we live in someone else's world for a few days. So all we do know is that we misjudge by the reputation or the representation of information that we receive from the television. Of course, not the radio. We would never have that on radio. That brings me to a great segue to my first guest. And my first guest is a gentleman by the name of Michael Freelander. And, well, this gentleman here, he's the proof that I was just talking about there for a second about how we only get to hear what they tell us on TV or we read in the newspaper. Now, we all form our own little personal opinions on that as we live in our own little Idahos. So we really don't have any kind of, feeling at all about it that's legit because we have no idea what the people are even going through. Well, I want to bring on a show on the show today a gentleman that has had some firsthand experience with detecting the scams. I mean, all the way from Nelson Mandela, for my Houston listeners, Enron, Bernie Madoff, just to name a few kind of popular names out there. I just don't want to be a name dropper. But Michael, are you there?
Yes, I am. Hi.
Well, and thank you for joining us today, Michael. We spoke before we got on the air about, there's the media, there's the information that we absorb from the media, which we turn into our own truth and our own excuse. And then there's the real truth that we never hear about. Now, you've had the opportunity of hearing some great things in your lifetime.
Yeah, I've been around the block a few times, yeah.
Now, your accent, it says here by your phone number that you're calling in from California.
I don't have an accent, Tony.
Oh, okay. Well, your wording's a little different than mine, and I'm sure that I need to speak properly, but where is that voice from?
I'm from South Africa originally, but I've lived in Los Angeles now for nearly 30 years.
30 years.
And I don't have an accent. You have an accent, but I don't.
And I can't do nothing but agree with you, Michael. Okay, because I'm seeing the people that you've been around, and there's just no way I'm going to ever go against any of your conversation. We're buddies. Anyway, South Africa, do you go back there?
You know, I haven't been back for ages. My family is here. My dad is retired, but he was a professor of pediatrics at the University of Southern California. So all my immediate family is here, so I really didn't have much reason to go back.
Now, I know by your – let me just read this little piece that I have on you. You're an international attorney, former CEO of an international music company, and a CEO of an international architectural design firm. Now, I'm just going to go take a shot at, like, you're in these positions because you became an attorney. Is that what got you into these spots? Is that part of it?
I specialized in international business work, transactional work mainly. And what happens, or what tends to happen, is that a client likes you and wants you to come aboard. And that's what happened in the case of the International Music Company. The client asked me to become the CEO of the company, and which I did for 4 or 5 years. And then I took a year off to write my book, and almost literally the day I had finished the first draft of the book, I was approached by somebody who had quite a prestigious international architectural design firm, and he asked me to come aboard as a temporary or an interim CEO. I agreed to do it for 4 months, and 4 years later, I was still there. Until I left.
Now, does that position a company better to have an attorney like yourself as a CEO versus a person that's not an attorney? I mean, is there a reason for that?
That's a really good question. You know, my theory all through my career is that you can't be an effective business lawyer unless you understand business. And you can't be effective in business unless you understand the legal environment in which you're working. So I don't think it's a huge jump for a business attorney to get into business. And I think in some respects I was really lucky because the experience that I had stood me in good stead for these business roles that I undertook.
Yeah, so maybe it should be a requirement to be a CEO of a company.
Well, I'll tell you that's a really interesting comment because my advice to young lawyers is that if you want to really learn how to be a good lawyer, you should try being the client of a lawyer, because it's really interesting that when you are the client of a lawyer, you get a completely different perspective on what clients are looking for. And I think that there are an awful lot of lawyers out there who don't understand that. So
it's amen
really
to that.
Yeah, I think that's true.
Because I always I've been fighting an incurable disease for, I don't know, 38 years, so I don't know why it's not incurable. But anyway, I say the same thing about doctors. A lot of times, doctors ought to be patients before they're doctors, and it might give them a whole new outlook on things. I guess everyone in general, you know, needs to take a look back sometimes and see the importance of both sides of the coin.
Well, you know what's really interesting that you say that is that one of Mandela's really great skills as a negotiator was his ability to put himself into the shoes of the other guy and see the world through his eyes. And that's really what we're talking about. You know, we're talking about the lawyer being able to see the world through the client's eyes and the doctor being able to see the world through the patient's eyes. I think that's a really good point. I think it's something we really have to do.
And, you know, Michael, I interview a lot of authors and speakers and a lot of small business owners. Me, and it's kind of weird. People say, well, that's a little bit of a stretch. I think that speakers and authors really need to be marketed. And I think small business owners can be marketed the same exact way, because I think what you just said should be on a lot of their mission statements is that they need to see the client. They need to see their product through the client's eyes. I mean, that cannot hurt anyone in business to be able to feel what they're producing out there as, you know, as the buyer, not just the seller.
I couldn't agree more. And I, you know, I'd go a step further. I would say that it's not a question that it can't hurt them. I would say that you cannot and I hate being dogmatic about this, but I think I can be dogmatic about this. I don't think you can succeed unless you have this ability, unless you have the skill to see the world through the other guy's eyes. I don't think it's possible.
Right, because, they say you got to have a vision, you got to have a goal, and all that stuff, but if you can't see where you're going to land, I don't know. I just really think that that's what our world is missing and what has been forced back into our lives all the way, if you go back 40 years ago, lives and times in individual neighborhoods were a lot different than they are now in schools and politics and all that stuff. And I think that we're going back to that slowly but surely because what the other alternative is wasn't working. So anyway, I could talk about that for days. Let's talk about your book. It's called Detecting the Scam, the Nelson Mandela's Gift. And then I'm just going to read the whole front of the cover here. It's introducing the 10 powers of negotiation and the duck school. Now, I got to be the first one to ask you, I'm sure, today anyway. What is the duck school?
Okay. The duck school is something I created, but not really. It's a school of common sense. It's the school with rules, and I doubt that any of the rules I'm going to tell you about will be new to you. But it's the school of common sense, and it's something that we have to be able to apply. And we have to also understand that there's certain obstacles to applying it, and we have to be careful about avoiding those obstacles.
Okay. I want to get everybody on board here. I want everybody to listen to your computer. www.detectingscape.com. And I'm taking a shot at this, Michael, but I'm thinking that if you go to the 10 powers, it's 10 powers of negotiation, I think that's where you're going with this, right?
Yeah, I mean, but yeah, that's exactly right. I mean, what I did, and let me just try and explain very briefly the connection between Nelson Mandela and detecting scams, because it sort of confused some people along the way. My view is that a scam is a swindle. Let's start off by defining what a scam is. It's a swindle, and by which people will tell you a lie, hoping that you will either act or not act on that lie. In other words, they'll want you to do something or not do something based on the lie. And it occurred to me that the best scammers are very, very effective negotiators. So what I decided was that if we were going to be able to stand up to the negotiating skills of the scammers, we'd have to be really good negotiators ourselves. And I thought that in looking at what makes somebody a good negotiator, why not use as a model somebody who I regarded as probably one of the greatest negotiators of all time, who is Nelson Mandela. So I looked at his negotiating skills, and I decided not just to lay them out as a bunch of rules, but to look at his life and see how he gained those skills, how he applied them. And what I did is I extrapolated from his life what I've called 10 powers of negotiation. Why powers? Because knowledge is power, and it's something that people really have to know. And it goes beyond simply the rules that they teach you in the business schools or the law schools. So I identified these 10 powers, and the important thing about it is that each of these powers has to be applied simultaneously. So you don't apply the first one and then the second one. But it's all about being aware of these powers. And just very, very quickly, we're talking about, and we can go into each of these separately if you'd like, but it starts with the power of the process and understanding that a negotiation is a process, which often includes a bunch of separate negotiations along the way, the first of which is to negotiate what you're actually negotiating about, which people sort of lose track of along the way. And then there's the power of preparation and the power of positioning, which is what we touched on very briefly, which is that you have to be able to see the world through the other guy's eyes, which you need a lot of preparation for. The power of positioning is once you see the world through the other guy's eyes, you then want to position the proposals that you make to him in a way that coincides with what that person is looking for. And then you have the powers of common sense and logic, which is the duck school. And then the powers of dignity, congeniality, humor, truth, fairness, and observation of listening and seeing. And then there are the powers of morality the power of patience, which is a huge power, and the greatest power perhaps of them all, which is the power to walk away. And what I've been telling people in recent interviews is that we have a huge advantage over scammers, because while the scammer has to persuade us to do something or not do something, we can always walk away, in which case the scam withers and dies. So the very best negotiators, in my experience, have all mastered these powers. And I think that's a very valuable tool that Nelson Mandela gives us to detect the scam. Now, let me just say one other thing, and then I will be quiet for a while. Nowhere in my book do I say that all scams are detectable, because they're not. The whole issue in detecting a scam is to detect a lie, and it's sometimes very difficult, if not impossible, to detect a lie. But my point is that by understanding what Nelson Mandela has taught us, we have a better shot at detecting somebody who's trying to sell us a lie. Sorry, a long answer to a very short question.
No, I think it's perfect. And now it's obvious you went to law school. You probably read more law books than I passed books on the shelf in the library. But in the process of going to law school, were these 10 powers ever a part of a course?
No. And I have to tell you, this is sort of something that continues to boggle my mind. What I write about in the book is that scammers have a number of fears. They have a number of obstacles they have to overcome. And one of them is that they don't like answering questions, and they don't like facing proficient negotiators. Now, what law schools and business schools tend to teach in the context of negotiation is that a negotiation is a means by which people resolve conflict. And nothing could be better for the scammers, because all they have to do is present something to us that doesn't reek of conflict, and we tend not to put on our negotiating caps. And I'll tell you, and I'm sure you know this, that not every negotiation is colored by conflict. If you think of a negotiation as the means by which people will try to persuade you to do something, that doesn't necessarily have to be all about conflict. And the business schools, and particularly the law schools, teach negotiation in the context of conflict resolution, because they're thinking about litigation and negotiating an end to a litigious situation. But I'll tell you that when you are talking to your kid and trying to persuade him to get off the computer, you're negotiating with him. Now, there may be an element of conflict there, or, you know, but I think it's a mistake to view negotiation only in terms of conflict.
Yeah. I don't know how you go about that. If it's even possible to get that injected into business law, I guess you would go towards that one area. But, you would think that that's something that is really in the book in a lot of places, because, well, in today's world, look, a lot of people have lawyers and doctors and you know, even the milkman, they get a bad name from time to time. It only takes one person to make everybody look bad at one time or another. But at the same time, how does a lawyer or a doctor or a negotiator or an arbitrator or somebody, how do they protect themselves if they haven't been given all the tools to use?
Well, you know, I'd make this one point, Tony. I've represented a lot of people over the years, and I will tell you that some of the best negotiators I've ever seen are people who didn't go to college. There's a certain street smarts about some people where they understand a lot of this stuff instinctively, and I will bet you and your listeners that there isn't one of these powers that you don't know about. Okay, it's just a question of sort of focusing in on them, and I joke often that one of the best negotiators I've ever faced is my 15-year-old son. Sorry, now 16 or 17. But when he was 15, I mean, we had one situation in which I just sort of sat back and laughed, because he handled me like an absolute expert. And I went into his room and I said to him, you know, we'd really like you to spend less time on the computer. Just get outside, get into the fresh air. And he said, but you know, I've just got straight A's. And I stood and I looked at him, and I was thinking, one of the negotiating skills that the best negotiators have is to frame the question. Now, you want to be sure that you're negotiating about the issue that you want to deal with, not the other issue. So here I am wanting him to get outside, and he's very, very skillfully framed the question into a completely different question, which is he's done really well at school. And I said, you know, I don't give a hell how well you've done at school. I want you to get outside. And he said, well, you know, if I stay here, I mean, what's the beef here? But anyway, to cut a long story short, a lot of these skills are instinctive skills. And you don't have to go to a school. And one of the problems that does exist, I think, and you're going to probably laugh and you may disagree with me when I say this, one of the problems is that I think the schools actually make us worse negotiators in some respects, and they stifle creativity because they tend to put you into a mold, into a position. And I think that's one of the reasons why some of the very best negotiators are people who haven't really attended a negotiating course necessarily. Now, I'm not I'm not demeaning the courses, because those courses are terrific. But you know, the ability to live.
I understand what you're saying, and I'll tell you why. I spent 18 years in the casino business. I worked for a dealer for 12 years, and I was worked my way up the last, of 10 years. And in the last 8 years, I worked myself up to the director of casino operations. I did go to college to beer parties. I never went and took a course in any college thing. And I used to go to these meetings with all the executives from the casinos. And, you know, I unfortunately called them bean counters, but, you know, they had all these reasons and why this and that had to equal. And I'm like, you know, we're not running a church here. There's no scientists coming in and gambling on the tables. These are street people, okay? And they want to gamble. And, you know, you have to be prepared to, you know, do what you, it's not written in a book. You know what I mean? It's just not there. And sometimes people need to be schooled. Because the people that are homeless are negotiating every day to get food or make their way. You know what I mean? And I just think that our schools waste a lot of time and money, and I'm not going to get started on that, on a bunch of stuff for kids to take a test to see if they pass, when there's so much more stuff. Like, you know, I used to think it was important for kids to know how to keep a checkbook. They don't have checks too much anymore, but they should learn how to keep a bank account. They should know what it's like to go into business. They should know what a business – I mean, there's just so many things. Instead of studying the Civil War, they should just be just coming up to speed a little bit more and, you know, knowing about negotiations. And, I mean, you can use negotiating in situations where kids are getting bullied in school. I mean, maybe that's
absolutely right.
See, so I think that we tend not to see the simple things. Like you said, these 10 things, and by the way, the ninth thing on there is my hardest thing, patience. You know, but it's important, and that's stuff that should be touched on. And I got to take a short break, Michael. We're going to come back. I want to talk about your book and, you know, get into the book and make sure we find out how people can purchase the book. And in the meantime, my listeners need to go to www.detectingthescam.com. We'll be right back after this short break.
You can project a professional image regardless of your size. Whether you're just starting or a small business, it's powerful to project a big company image to build credibility with your new prospects. Virtual Tone has a package to give you that confident presence you need. You can have a big company image over the phone and on the internet with one package. Everything you need now and in the months and years to come. Virtual Tone includes a robust, expandable package of business tools and features that will help your business grow. Your package is full of powerful business tools, which include phone system with phone line that's ready to expand when you are. Web hosting, including blog up to 25 websites. Email system with filters and security. Popular contact management system. Absolutely the only communication system your business will ever need. Guaranteed. Virtual Tone Entrepreneur Packages, starting for only $99.97 monthly.
Okay, welcome back to Tough Talk with Tony Gambone. And Great show here today, folks. Michael Freelander, originally from South Africa, been a Californian for over 30 years now. We were just talking about the art of negotiating from it, whether it's your 15-year-old child or the 70-year-old man sitting across the table from you trying to act like he's just trying to pay attention to the new things. It goes on every day, and there's a simple way to detect things. Okay, but most of the time, just like everything else in life, we're caught up in our own little life, and we don't see the importance of teaching our children, our coworkers, and ourselves new things. So I highly recommend people checking out Detecting the Scam, okay? And you can purchase the book. Michael, it's everywhere, right?
No, unfortunately it's not. At the moment it's only on Amazon. But it's the hard copy version as well as the Kindle version, the electronic version. And I'm in the process of doing an audio book, which is a harrowing experience reading the book to myself. But that should be ready in a month or so.
Now, what do you think of that whole process? Like, I mean, I heard on the news about libraries, you know, authors have books that... I was at this event this weekend for authors, and they were talking about how books go through the library so many times, and now people are starting to do audio books. And I mean, there's a whole new world out there.
No, it really is. But, you know, I think in California particularly, you spend so much time in your car that it's quite a nice way to fill that time, is to have somebody read to you. But the whole world of publishing has changed, as you know. I mean, it's just a different world out there right now.
I think it's cool because, like, here in Houston, it's kind of like California. Anywhere you drive in the city isn't that far away, but it's an hour. It's always an hour. I mean, really, I mean, if you time it right, you can get in there in 40 minutes, but it's an hour. So, you know, if you can do the audio thing... I mean, I think Brian Tracy would have loved it if he really realized that it would have been an hour everywhere you go, because he says to use the audio versions of everything to keep up on things, and I think the book thing is good. Now, let's talk about the meat of your book. Time goes faster on the show, and I know we've been just chatting away, but I'd like to get the meat of the book out there for him.
Okay, well, I mean, basically what I did, just in the real nutshell version, is that the first half of the book, I look at Nelson Mandela's life and I explore how he came to acquire his skills and qualities and how he applied them, really important. And to me, I found it really interesting, and I think the first half of the book reads like a novel. I mean, some of the stuff I couldn't have made up. But in the second part of the book, what I do is I apply some of Nelson Mandela's approach to negotiation, and I apply them to the Enron and the Bernie Madoff scams. And basically the conclusion I reach, which I think is a quite reasonable one, is that if you had applied the level of preparation, for example, to the Enron and Madoff scams as Mandela applied to his negotiations with the Afrikaner government, you wouldn't have touched Enron or Madoff with a barge pole. You just wouldn't have done it. And the kind of information that I was able to dig up was information that was actually available at the time. And there were people who wrote articles about this that were ignored. Which leads me to the one major obstacle to applying the Duck School. And that is that people want to believe so badly that they refuse to see what's in front of them. And, you know, that is the scammer's greatest wish. That, you know, he wants to deal with people who want to believe so badly that they just won't stare reality in the eye. So that, you know, that the book is sort of divided into two. The first part is about Mandela's life, and the second talks about these three scams and how, if you had really done some basic preparation into the events surrounding those companies and events, you wouldn't have touched them with a barge pole. And if, you know, if we had more time, I could tell you about a test that I apply, and the test basically is, well, the question that the test raises is, can you be scammed if you know about the lie but still do the deal? And my answer is, hell no, you can't. You have to take responsibility. If you know about the lie and you still do the deal, you can't later whine and complain that you were scammed because you knew about the lie. And my point is that, in the major scams, certainly, I find it absolutely impossible to believe, and I think Congress agrees with me on this because there were all kinds of congressional reports out, that many of the people closest to the scammers actually identified and knew about the lie, but they put personal gain ahead of integrity. And that was why there were scams.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's unfortunate. I blame it on human nature that some people are more greedier than others. The whole word of integrity seems to be slowly dissolving, and it's scary when you think about your 16 or 17-year-old going up 5, 6, 7 more years and having children, and like, what's that going to come out to be at that time and point? Like, so this whole thing repeating back into a circle where people are starting to pay attention more so now because they have to. Things aren't so easily done.
Let me just interrupt you 1 second, because I think the example of the kid is a really interesting example, because depending on how the parents bring the kids up and depending on the schools that the kids go to, there are some kids that will grow up not to be cheaters because that's the environment in which they've been brought up. And I think that our biggest challenge is to get our business leaders and the leaders of our schools to treat this whole business of cheating much more seriously than they are. And the whole, you know, the whole beauty of Nelson Mandela was something which has been referred to as his moral authority. And what that meant is that he always put his own interests behind the interests of those he represented. That was a feature of his whole life, from the earliest days right till, you know, the end. He always put the interests of those he represented ahead of his own interests. And guess what? In all the scams, the leaders of the scam companies did the opposite. And I think it's about leadership. It's about people stepping up and laying out what is acceptable and what isn't.
Yeah. Well, Michael, I appreciate your time today. It goes really fast. I have another gentleman waiting on the line to come on. I would surely like to do a couple things. One is invite you back anytime you want. And two is to make sure that when the audio book comes out, to come back on so we can spend more time talking deeper about it. And, I mean, I just wish you a lot of luck, and I hope – is there a second book coming?
No, I'm having enough trouble reading the first one to myself.
That's a yes if I ever heard it. So I'm not going to let you scam me into thinking anything different. Anyway, I really do appreciate your time today, and I really do mean that. You have an open invitation anytime. You know, you can call in on this number anytime, and we'll take a call from you and announce something that's taking place and promote whatever it is you'd like to do, or come back and be a guest again, Michael.
Great. Well, thank you very much. I really enjoyed talking to you. It was really fun.
Thank you, sir. And we're going to be right back with our next guest, a gentleman by the name of Marvin D. Wilson. Now, Marvin, okay, he has, he has a widely varied and rich life experience background. He's from, he was a hippie rock and roll musician to a nightclub entertainer to a Zen Buddhist minister. Okay, I mean, the list goes on. He was a carpenter, a small business owner, a network marketer, to sales training, to skilled trade instructor, an adult education teacher, and a public speaker, and now a published author with self-proclaimed. I'm telling you, this guy, I'm going to get along real good with Marvin because him and I have a lot of similarities. I knew a hippie rock and roller, and I used to go to nightclubs. So we're going to be right back after this short break, and we're going to get Marvin up on the show here.
Essential Effects Marketing and Promotions wants you. If you're a small business owner looking to harness the power of e-marketing and need an affordable solution designed to turn your marketing expenses into profits, then you need Essential Effects Marketing and Promotions. We have provided small and mid-sized businesses solutions to help them grow. And now we want to work for you. Essential Effects wants to be your expert in corporate branding, from website and logo design to corporate branding and training. We will offer a quick and easy solution designed to help you make money now. Call us today to receive your complimentary consultation. Don't let another day go by without doing something for your brand. Visit us on the web, www.e2mp.com. That's www.e2mp.com. Or give us a call at 713-965-7306.
Okay, welcome back to Tough Talk with Tony Gambone. We just got done an interview with Michael Freelander out of California. He is an international attorney that has written a book called Detecting the Scam. It's a Nelson Mandela gift. It's quite a book. It's The 10 Powers of Negotiating and The Duck School. I find it very interesting, and I highly recommend reading it. Go to www.detectingthescam.com. Check it out. It's a good read. And I'd like to get some feedback on it if you would care to call in and let us know about that. Now, our next guest, well, he's a gentleman that has been patiently waiting because, you know, I over-talk all the time. But Marvin Wilson, as I had said right before the break, well, he's an ex-hippie. He's an ex-rock and roller. He's an ex-nightclub entertainer. He's an ex-Buddhist. Well, I don't know if he's ex-Buddhist, but he's a Buddha. He was a Zen Buddhist minister. And now here's where we start to relate. I mean, I did the casino life for 20 years. I was a carpenter, a business owner, a network marketer, and sales and trades and all kinds of stuff. Marvin, welcome to the show.
Sounds like we're old spirit brothers here.
Tony, I don't know why. I don't know why I don't recognize your photo. I mean, I've had to see you somewheres in life, somewheres.
Yeah, maybe at Woodstock or the March on Washington, the Vietnam moratorium. Somewhere we must have hooked up.
Now, it says that you're from Saginaw. You're currently in Saginaw, Michigan, right?
Yeah, I'm in Saginaw. Well, I've spent most of my adult life in Michigan. I was actually born in Indiana, but I've lived in... I've lived mostly in the United States, here in Michigan. I did do a brief stint in Canada, and I lived for a short time in Mexico. But, yeah, right now I'm in Saginaw. We call it Sag Nasty, Michigan.
Yeah, well, the weather's getting warm now, right?
The weather's awesome, man. One of my passions is organic gardening, and garden is just jamming right now. And, Saginaw is like a valley. It's the Saginaw Valley, so the soil is very fertile and the temperature is temperate.
Well, I'm down here in Houston. I mean, I've born and raised outside of Philadelphia, lived in Vegas for 18 years, but I've been in Houston for the last 13 years, and it doesn't get cold ever. It gets hot.
No, I know. I have a brother who lives in Dallas, and when I go down there to visit, when he comes up here, he's been there most of his adult life. He comes back to Michigan, if it's 60 degrees, he's got his sweater on. I'm like, man, it's not cold here, bro.
Yeah. Well, you know, you get used to it. I lived in the place where the weather was really good, but the cost that it had me living in Las Vegas, not because of the rent or anything, just because I couldn't stay out of the fun. But I think that's where we relate. Okay, now I'm looking at your latest book, Beware the Devil's Hug. I got to tell you, buddy, this is an awesome cover. I mean, this is awesome. Now, before we get started here, let me just tell everybody, www.theoldsilly.com, right? theoldsilly.com.
The old silly.
I mean, this is the Old Silly Free Spirit blog. And this book is called Beware the Devil's Hug. And I just want to read this real short little part of it. It's, what if a homeless, smelly, ugly, unkempt old man had a hug so powerful it could cure cancer? Cause a prostitute to stop hooking and seek true love, shake the demons of addiction free from a junkie, make a Christian want to embrace and love a Muslim, and vice versa. But rare is the beneficiary of his divine embrace. Nobody wants to come near him out of fear. Now, man, you know, I got to tell you this real short story. I worked with this mother and daughter here in Houston, and they have an organization called Feed a Friend Houston, and they feed the homeless here in Houston. And I used to talk in these network groups and support this group and ask people, you know, I used to say, and this is true, like I would pull up to the red light before I got involved in these kind of charities and realize the difference. mean, we don't even put our windows down. Some people even lock their door. And, you
right.
know, after the last 3 years of the economy, people are on a daily basis of being one step closer to that spot. And, I mean, you just can't judge that. And I think that that's something that God throws at us for every once in a while that, like, you know, makes us go back and realize, you know, and that's what caught my eye, beware the devil's hug. So I'm a big person on the don't let Satan steal my joy. So, yeah, I'm very impressed with this. Tell me. Let's take the short journey on from the rock and roll musician all the way up to current day.
Okay, well, let's see. Started probably in 1963 when I was 14, and I was in bed with rheumatic heart fever, and all I could do, I couldn't even sit up or move or anything because I was so sick. But the Beatles came on the Ed Sullivan Show. And from then on, I knew that I couldn't just watch this. I had to do this. I had to be a rock and roll player. And as soon as I got well, I got a guitar. Long story, I went on. By the way, I've always been musical. I was like choir president in high school and starred in all the musicals and all that. Went to college on a music scholarship with a theater minor. Dropped out of college in 1969 because I tuned in, turned on, and dropped out with the hippie movement. Joined a rock and roll band. Spent about 15 years traveling all over Canada, United States, playing rock and roll. And let's see, where am I? I've been in the late 70s. I met this one fascinating woman, and she got me to throw my little black book away. We started having kids, and I had to get a real job because I hadn't made it as a big name rock and roller. so then I that was also about the time I was getting interested in spiritual things, and I was interested in Zen. I had found a book about it and started practicing myself. I found out about a Zen group that was forming in Ann Arbor, Michigan. And so I quit the band, sold the house I had bought, moved my wife and one child at the time in with my mother-in-law temporarily while I went down and started training in Zen. While I was there, part of Zen training is that you work. It's called work practice. Well, the head monk that I was training under was a carpenter, a trade. So he taught me the carpentry skill, and we started a... like a little business, and just went around, basically around the neighborhood, said we can do anything, and if we got a job, we didn't know how to do it, we went and bought one of those Sunset books and figured out how to do it, and started getting business. Well, pretty soon I was able to afford to move my wife and kids down, got an apartment near the temple. I continued training formally for about 4 years, but during that time we built up a home improvement company. Well, the master of the temple, who was headquartered in his main temples in Toronto, came back to the States one day, and he saw all this business activity going on in the temple because we were running it was called People's Carpentry, was the name of the business. We were running it out of the temple. He didn't like that. He thought it was, you know, distracting. So another long story made short, they sold the business to me, and I then became a business owner while I was still training in Zen. At a certain point in my Zen training, I had to, this was after I was ordained, but here's the thing about training with a Zen master, where I understand it happens in the Hindu practice, whatever. At a certain point, the teacher wants you to propagate his Dharma and, you know, forsake the world and go start a temple and, you know, become, you know, like a strawberry plant sends out runners and starts another plant. And I just didn't want to do that. So we came to a parting of ways. I still practice Zen meditation, even though I'm a spiritualist. Christian is actually my main path now, but I find that Zen meditation deepens any kind of spiritual pursuit. So I moved away from the temple, further away, and started up continued on building up a rather successful home improvement coming through the 80s and early 90s. Did I go past your question?
No, this is part. See, Marvin, I've probably interviewed, I don't know, 50 authors since the first of the year. Okay, and what I like people to be able to do is separate one from the other because of where they've been and how they got to what they're doing now. Because,
sure.
I mean, the back of your book reads really cool, but there's a lot of people that are paid big money to write that kind of stuff. But
yeah.
For someone to be able to, and you know, I'm about 7 years younger than you, but okay. I lived through the same period of time, and I'm making all kinds of connections to 63 with the Beatles on Ed Sullivan. I remember exactly where I was watching it. So, you know, I like people to make that connection in your life. So, you know, they just don't go by my word about probably the coolest book cover. And gosh, I hate saying this because so many authors have sent me books, but this is really a cool book cover. I mean, this looks like somebody that was an ex-biker, maybe, with the Hell's Angels back in the early 60s, and now is probably 85, 90-year-old guy. And the truth be known, this guy in the photo is probably only about 60 years old. It's just the life that he's had to live that makes him look so old.
The man pictured on the front cover of the book is actually, he is an actual homeless person in New York. He has a website. no kidding. He has a website, and there's all these photos of him that are royalty-free you can download. I didn't know about him, but my publisher, when looking for a good image to put on the cover, my publisher, by the way, is All Things That Matter Press, Phil and Deb Harris out of Maine, run a very, very great, it's a small publishing house, but they attract people who like to write about things that matter, and they take diamonds in the rough type authors, new authors, and whip them into shape. I'm getting sidetracked here. But anyway.
No, that's okay. Let me just interrupt you 1 second, Marvin. Let me interrupt. So, because there's a lot of people that come on my show, listen to my show, business owners, speakers, authors, and they're always coming up with new books. I want to plug that company. It's All Things That Matter Press.com. Check it out, okay? And send your inquiries there. Tell them you heard Marvin on the show mentioning that. And because I always tell people, check out every resource. Don't just settle for what you think you heard or you think is good. Compare it. So go ahead. I'm sorry to interrupt you.
No, I appreciate that. As a matter of fact, I'm an editor on staff with All Things That Matter Press, too. That's one of the other things I do in the literary world, is I'm a professional editor. But, yeah, thanks for the plug. It's a great organization. You'll be hearing great things from them, and they got a growing number of very talented, relatively unknown authors, but you're going to be hearing about them soon, I'm sure. So, where were we? I was...
Okay, well, I got you right now. I got you up to, they kicked you out of the thing. No, you moved on and bought the business.
Right.
I'm sorry, I have to do that once in a while. It's my nature. And you're in the early 90s, and I think you're about ready to talk about the network marketing.
Oh, yeah. Actually, it was in the mid-90s I got into the world of network marketing. I had a thriving home improvement business company at the time. But it was a lot of work. It was a lot of headaches. There was always cash flow problems. If you've run a small business, anyone listening or you, Tony, they say, hey, go into business for yourself because you can choose the hours you want to work. Yeah, right. You can choose which 120 hours out of the week you want to work. You know, you're just, it's full time.
You know why that is that way, though. You know why that is. I can tell. I knew you and I, we had a connection. Because you were probably pretty much, very much like myself. You had to do the work yourself. And instead of putting people in place to do the work, because it kind of affected your reputation as the business owner to get the kind of work out. And when that happens like that there, that's why I gave up my remodeling business after 12 years. It was because I couldn't take it anymore. I worked more hours than there were in the day.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, well, I was starting to delegate. It was believe me, I went through so many people that I couldn't find, it's hard to find people who can do it as well as you can, you know, that are willing to work with you for what you can afford to pay them. But anyway, along came this, you know, opportunity of a lifetime. I got went to a meeting and got completely enthralled with the it was back before satellite dishes were popular. It was a personal development company. It was broadcasting over satellite dish, personal improvement stuff, you know, on TV. So you could get your dish, hook it up, and you can get 24 hours a day, you know, self-help, self-improvement. Brian Tracy, I heard you mention him in the last
right.
Last half hour. Les Brown, Mark Victor Hansen. I mean, I could just go on and on and on. Everything from family and relations to business ownership to effective public speaking, just any way to improve yourself, it was on that show. And I was into personal development at the time, and I thought, well, this is going to take off. Well, anyway, I really went full-time to that. I became one of the most sought-after speakers on the circuit. I was developing a big downline, but I was losing my focus on my business, my primary business, the one that was feeding my family. And here's another long story we're going to cut short. After a few years, that company was sold right out from under all of us distributors' noses to Prepaid Legal Services. And I had to start all over building another, you know, downline. And I was successful with that for a while. Shoot, I thought I was going to make $200,000 one year. But then they have this payback system where you get paid up front for someone who's going to pay for 3 years. But if they stop early, you get a chargeback. Well, anyway, I got charged back so severely that that business crumbled. And along about that time, my remodeling company went in the tank because I just was not, I was reaching for the stars and not keeping my feet on the ground. And so, Tony, I'll tell you, it was about the late 90s. That company went down. My marriage was on the rocks. We were having all kinds of problems. I started drinking heavily. I went outside the marriage because we were fighting at home. We separated. Found me a girlfriend over in Detroit. Several months later, I found out she was a crack user, and I tried it one day. And that led to a story that I tell about in my first book, which is called I Romance the Stone, Memoirs of a Recovering Hippie. And another long story made short, I nearly killed myself and wound up having to go into rehab, wrote about it, and I have a book that's out there as a testament that there is a saving grace available for people no matter how low you get. Anyway, I decided to go into writing after that as a way to give back, and my books are spiritual, inspirational in nature, although I write with a sort of a cross. I don't know if you've read Beware the Devil's Hug yet, but my books are not preachy, but they have inspirational messages in them of the resilience and hope of the human spirit if you get connected to the Godhood.
Yeah, I'm impressed. I finger through. When I get the books, I have a stack on my nightstand. And, you know, I got to be honest, Marvin, you know, up to a year ago, I didn't read anything. I could get 21. I can do any dice table payoff, roulette table payoff. I can master all the numbers, right? But for years and years and years, I didn't even read the instructions on something to put together until I put it together. I just wanted to make sure the guy writing the instructions got it right. And a year ago, I kind of got sick and gave up my remodeling business and started reading all these different books about self-help, like you were mentioning. And I started reading an hour a day because I think it was Brian Tracy or Dale Carnegie. Somebody said that if you read an hour a day, you'll be 50 books ahead of every average reader. And I'm thinking, okay, well, at 54, I really need to get started, you know. And I've had people say to me, what a great story you have. You should write a book. I'm like, look, I just got started with the reading end of it. I can't get to the writing part. But, you know, but truth of the matter is...
a while first, okay?
Yeah. But so I have these books that I keep paging through different parts of the day or evening. When the one book I'm actually reading a book from 1973 right now, See You at the Top by Zig Ziglar. And, you know, it blows me away that, you know, back in the 74, I was graduating high school, you know, and I was just too crazy being a maniac. The stuff that they wrote in there, I mean, like, one of my favorite things is being a flea trainer, you know, how to train fleas. And people look at me like you're stupid. But the moral, you know, like you can put a bunch of fleas in a mayonnaise jar, put the lid on it, and they'll keep hitting the top of the lid, and eventually it'll stop jumping that high. And then you can take the lid off, and they won't jump out because they're just used to jumping that high again. And, you know, once they've conditioned themselves to jump just so high, that's all they want to do after that. So, you know, life is the same way, and experiences that you've gone through are all for a perfect reason, because it had to get you to where you are today to provide what you are providing for others that have been through that mission. I mean, I don't know why they just didn't give a notice to us way up front, probably because we wouldn't have believed it anyway. You know what I mean? Right. But, you know, it's amazing. It's very, very amazing. Now, you've written more than one book. You've written Beware the Devil's Hug, Owen Fiddler, I Romance the Stone, and that's about your crack addiction, and Between the Storm and the Rainbow. And so you got a lot of books out there. So let me ask you a couple.
Okay.
I'm sorry. We run out of time quickly here, but they might come on and tell us that we got 90 seconds, but that doesn't mean we can't keep talking because it'll be recorded and you can hear it on the archive anyway. One of the things I wanted to ask you is you went through all these changes, you wrote all these books. Writing the books, was that a way of therapy for you?
I would say the first one, I Romance the Stone, was a cathartic cleansing experience, very therapeutic. The second book, Owen Fiddler, which is a novel, it's kind of a biography, only it's a fiction, using a fictional character that doesn't take any responsibility for himself or any of his actions. That the world owes him a living. You know, everything wrong that's happening to him is someone's fault, or society's fault, or the government's fault, or his parents' fault, or whatever. But he's just the classic law of attraction. Completely, you know, he's attracting everything opposite of what he wants because he doesn't realize he's the cause of everything that's coming his way. And that's why his name is Owen Fiddler. You've heard the phrase, you want to dance, you got to pay the fiddler?
Yes, sir.
Okay, well, he's always Owen the Fiddler.
Yeah, he's Owen him.
Yeah, and his brother's name is Pays Fiddler, because he pays the fiddler, and he has a daughter named Friend of the Fiddler. She's a friend of the fiddler. Everyone's middle name is The. It's a very significant... I'm very careful in my choice of names. When I do novels, like you'll notice in Beware the Devil's Hug, the lead character is I am, which is of course a play on the biblical I am that I am. He just is. He's asked what his last name is. I don't have one. I just I am. So, and then of course Beware the Devil's Hug. Between the Storm and the Rainbow is a compilation of some of my most popular blog posts over the past several years. Basically, short essays on everything from humorous to spiritual, inspirational, sometimes an occasional social, political commentary.
Now, I'm looking on your website. It has live traffic feed. And I'm seeing Conroe, Texas. I wonder what that is. Now, this is your blog site.
And okay,
on your website here, like right across from I Romance the Stone, underneath share, Facebook, Twitter, and email, there's a live traffic feed. I mean,
live. Well, I think that's where you can get a direct feed from the blog. Is that one of those share buttons to get it onto Facebook or Twitter?
I don't know. I gotta, because it has my hometown there.
No, that's where you just logged on, right? So it tells me where people have logged on from.
That's tripping me out, man. I'm like, what the heck is going on here? So, because saying that's like a little bit too coincidental. Anyway, so with the books that you've written, you've turned your life around, I assume, because you wouldn't be on the radio talking about it if you hadn't. what is it that you do mostly now? Is it just working with the publishing company, editing books, or do you go out and speak?
I do go out on speaking engagements. I'm also active. I'm active. My brother is a Christian minister, and I'm living. That's why I'm up here in Saginaw, right? He's one of these great Christian ministers that really walks his talk. Most of his ministry is about community outreach. He has boxing programs and mentoring programs for at-risk youth and stuff. So I'm up here helping him with that. And I'm an organic gardener. And then I spend most of my time when I'm not gardening or, you know, helping out with the outreach programs, editing or writing books.
So you're staying busy? Staying out?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Got to, man.
Yeah. Staying out of trouble?
we want to talk about that. But,
yeah. Well, hey, you know, sometimes you just got to draw the line in the sand and put your faith where you know it should be and, you know what I mean? Because at the end of the day, we really don't own anything else. You know, and it seems like you have a God-gifted talent, okay, of a liver of life. And I've come to terms with myself in the past short months that that's what I was here for. I wasn't here to be the maniac that I chose to be. I was here to test that ability and spread the word on how not to, not to lose on that concept. I mean, you can still be the person that you want to be, but you can do it in a way where you can benefit from it and others can benefit from it. And if you're helping others, it's totally going to help you to stay on track to where you need to be.
And that's what it's all about. It's all about helping each other, you know. One of my favorite quotes of Jesus from the New Testament is, there are only two commandments, to love God with all your heart, mind, body, and soul, and to love your neighbor as yourself. If you're doing those two things, you're going to go through any kind of obstacle, and you're going to come through it just fine, but you got to put others equal to, if not above, yourself, and realize that we're all one, we're all part of the same one thing, which is no thing, which is all. So I can't hurt you, Tony, without hurting myself. I can't cheat somebody else without cheating myself. But if I help somebody else, I'm helping myself. And it's a very simple concept, but it's hard to live until you really have had a few hard knocks and realize, you know what? And that's why I wrote Owen Fiddler. You know, what goes around does come around.
Yeah, And then you got to watch how you say that because, you know, I used to say, well, I know what goes around comes around. He'll get his. It's just so hard to do. It's hard to love thy neighbor as you love thyself, you know, because, I mean, it's just, you know what he's really like, you know, but you can't put that. It's an ongoing project. And I think that's part of the test. You know what I mean? Yeah. You're not expected to be perfect. You're just expected to be trying all the time. So, anyway.
Exactly. Yeah.
Marvin, I appreciate your time today on the show with us. When's the next book coming out?
I'm working. I have two works in progress right now. Might get one out this fall, but probably at least by this winter or next spring, you can see another couple books coming out. I have a sequel to Owen Fiddler. A bit in mind, and a sequel to Beware the Devil's Hug. So, you'll see some more from me within the next 6 to 9 months, probably.
Well, please come back on the show and let us know what's up. Keep us up to date. And if you're ever in Houston or if you're coming to Houston, please email me, tony@tonygambone.com. I'd love to sit down and have a cup of coffee with you.
Oh, man, it'd be great. It was a pleasure being on the show tonight. Thanks, Tony.
Thank you, pal. You have a great day. Okay, folks, that kind of wraps up our show today. And I just want to make sure that we just touch on one of the things that we were talking about earlier was scams. Everybody needs to know how to negotiate themselves properly. And the gentleman, Mike Freelander, wrote that book about scams and how to negotiate properly so you don't get scammed. And then we had the opportunity of talking to Marvin Wilson, a gentleman that has lived a lot of life, has done a lot of things, good, bad, and other. Now he's the author of at least 4 books. 5 and 6 are coming out. He's an editor at the publishing company as well. He's turned his life completely around. Beware of the Devil's Hug. Make sure to check out the book. And as always, you can go to my website, the previous guest page, under Tough Talk with Tony Gambone Radio, and find out all the information and get the list of recording as well. Good luck to you all. Great week. Talk to you on Wednesday. Thank you.